Seconded.
Mr. Moore.
Thank you, Your Honour. We were moving through the matters of discretion on your proposed restricted discretionary activity rule, and we had made our way through to matter C, and we've given that a reasonable shake in terms of what it might and might not do. So I'd like to move on now to matter D, which relates to the water management plan, which is, I understand it, an entry condition to the rule. So a water management plan needs to have been produced to gain access to the pathway. And then the matter of discretion is restricted to considering the extent to which that plan meets the requirements that you've set out in your subparagraph D.
Correct.
So looking at Roman 1, where you've referred to water use management, what is it that you have in mind there?
One, including water use management, is what you would normally see in an asset management plan. So it's the in those documents, the council will just refer in a general sense to what the use of the water, you know, how the network functions. So that will include the use of the treatment plant as well as the infrastructure that goes with it.
So reference in Roman 1 is more about the supply system or the infrastructure itself as opposed to the uses?
That's right, yeah, because Roman 1 is a description of the water supply system, including.
So when I read water use management, one interpretation might be that that's about the way in which water use is managed by the end users. But that's not what's intended here.
Well, as I said, it's a description of the water supply system.
Do you see that there could be some ambiguity as to how that might be applied?
Not in terms of, as I stand it, from a practitioner, because these are terms which translate through into other documents that an asset manager for a TA produces.
Now, Roman 2 deals with the assessment of existing and future demand for water, and that's presumably picking up on work done through the NPS UD and long-term plans as well.
Yeah, that's correct, yes. So any of the spatial plans that was referenced by the TAs.
And when you're thinking about this item, do you have in mind that it's the existing and future demand over the duration of the permit or beyond the duration of the permit?
I think the scope of the exercise, if it's driven by the NPS, well, in fact, by all of them, would extend well beyond. But having said that, it would obviously be tailored to the term of the consent sought, which in this case would be up to the 2035.
Roman 3, how the water supply network is planned and managed to minimise water losses as far as practicable. So what sort of information would you anticipate being provided in that context?
I think of a similar nature to what we saw in DCC's water conservation and management plan. So they knew the percentage loss and they an indication of what the likely leakage is or such forth.
So that document's perhaps a good example of where that type of information or the type of information you had in mind in relation to this matter?
Yes, and that's possibly it's not a direct translation, but certainly these matters are familiar to TA water asset managers because they produce similar documents for other statutory purposes. So it translates well.
And would the same reasoning apply to items 4 and 5 in terms of capturing the matters addressed therein?
Yes, so four and five, we'll again come back to the DCC one around conservation measures. I mean, the first one under Roman 4 is essentially good practice. Leak detection and repair, metering and community education. I think all of the, aside from metering, I think all of the TAs have components of that in the Otago region and their management of water.
And then looking at Roman 6, starting with the description of patterns of water use practices and or behaviour in all sectors of end use. So what type of information, what level of information do you consider would be required to satisfy that requirement?
I think given the driver here, the objective of maximising water use efficiency and reducing water use as far as practicable, so that would include the breadth that we see in existing management plans around things such as the conservation measures, educational matters, as well as a narrative on what the use practices are. So, for example, in X area, we have Y number of households and their consumption level is Z. That's the sort of thing I would be thinking of.
When you think about the information that's available and the evidence that we've heard, it may well be that the CODC can provide the level of information based on its water metering records in terms of the patterns of water use practices. Do you, in the absence of water metering data across other TAs in the region, do you consider there is sufficient understanding and knowledge to be able to answer this requirement?
Well, the criteria does not require water meters. Having said that, I'd really accept the fact that, as we saw with the CODC data versus Dunedin City Council's equivalent, just the value of having water metering in place.
I'm sorry, what was the last part? I got to equivalent and I didn't hear the last part.
Oh, sorry. So the criterion, the description of patterns of water use practices, for CODC, as we saw from the evidence, is right down to subparts of percentages per use.
Comprehensive, yeah.
The contra to that is Dunedin City Council, which doesn't meter, and therefore relies on essentially survey data, I think, of 100 households that are metered. So their level of knowledge of practices is obviously a lot less.
You then go on under a subparagraph E to add some further requirements for replacement consents, and that looks like you've pulled through drafting from the existing restricted discretionary activity rule.
That's correct.
As with matters F, G and H.
Yep. Yes, that is correct.
Now, when you think about these matters of discretion in the context of an application for a new permit, there's nothing here whereby the council could take into account adverse effects on the environment associated with the take, is there?
Yes, and as we discussed prior, there will be there will obviously be the NES for freshwater management, but there could also be, if needed, a relatively simple cross-reference to the existing matters of discretion, which include environmental and ecological matters under 4.1.8.
Except in the context of applications for new takes, the full range of effects needs to be considered?
Yes.
And then thinking about how the these provisions, as you have suggested them to be, might apply to the replacement of existing consents. You're suggesting a 15-year term, and in the absence of any consideration of environmental factors, is it your view that it's appropriate to exclude that consideration in the context of existing community water supplies?
It's within the term of the new plan, as would be any other consent that has limited duration to 6 years. So there's a relativity there.
So in a sense, it's simply a rollover, but for a 15-year period on current terms, but with the additional factors you've outlined in terms of the water management plan.
Yes, that's correct.
And then finally, you have added some text to the non-notification clause at the end, such that applications for a 15-year permit are also to be processed on a non-notified basis.
Yes, that's correct. So it's consistent with the other proposed RDA rule.
And given the duration being sort of 15 years, is it your view that it's appropriate to exclude potential notification of such applications?
Yes, it is.
In the context of an application for a new permit, do you consider it's appropriate to exclude notification?
Yes, equally, because again, it comes back to the purpose of this, which is limited duration, relatively limited duration, all within the term of the new plan.
Thank you.
Re-examination. Right.
Okay. I feel like we understand what the issues are, and
traversed.
So.
And it's a work in progress,
yeah.
Which isn't to criticise, because I know there's a tremendous amount of work, and I think a lot here is actually of real value.
Mm.
So it's a work in progress. In other words, our minds are completely open. But I do have a question. You've come back throughout, the course of this, your hearing, about 15 years is appropriate because, you know, that's the lifetime of the land and water plan. So I guess that's the 5 years before we see it's
yep.
It becoming operational, and then another 10 years after that. So 15 years. And for new permits, why is that? Why is the lifetime of the new regional plan the thing that you measure the appropriateness of duration? I don't understand that, what your reasoning is for that.
I guess because I'm reflecting without any, obviously, foreknowledge of what the content of the new plan will be, since that is as yet unknown.
Mm.
The objective is transition to such a plan. The guidance that we have on that is the higher order directive in the MPSFM, namely the Te Mana o te wai. From that, I'm looking at a term that is within the, again, with it's with, whether it's existing or new, it seems to me, from the purpose of the TAs, it's not a significant decision driver, because there are, in many cases, they've got existing takes, but they're applying for a new take for reasons of infrastructure, e.g. amalgamate services and the like. So there didn't seem to be a distinction between existing and new in that regard. And so therefore, they essentially could be bundled into under one rule in one part of the plan. But the overriding thing is that regardless of whether it's existing or new, I thought it reasonable and appropriate that it's time bound, because this plan is plan change, I should say, is on the cusp of a new planning regime coming in.
But so with a 15-year consent, that brings territorial consents, if you like, beyond the boundary of the regional plan. In fact, you overshoot it such that if there's anything to be done, it's to be done in the next version of the land and water plan in 15 years' time. Have I understood that correctly?
Well, up to, so potentially, you know, if it's within, yeah, it could overshoot if it's, I'll just go back to the objective and just refresh. And this is one of the things, is that the PC7 in some way refers to a duration of 6 years. Now, I'm assuming that the ORC, when it grants new takes, won't set a commencement date sometime in the future, which would negate the whole purpose of the 6 years. What I've put there is a direct expiry date, 31 December 2035. So even if a TA, say, applied for a permit 5-10 years, it's still very time-bound. In fact, in many cases, it could be less than 6 years. So in other words, it's confined squarely within the life of the plan, the new plan. Yeah, that's essentially it. Yeah.
Unless the region reviews every TA's consent, and there may be problems,
yeah,
we heard yesterday, in terms of the infrastructure and the settings that the infrastructure has been designed for. So unless the TA reviews every consent, then even though the expiry date is time-bound by 15 years, the TAs are saying we don't need to respond to any new policy setting under the RPS or RPS or regional plans. And that's in contradistinction to farming, which also has infrastructure in the ground. It also comes at an enormous cost, possibly even a larger cost than some of the figures I've seen, than faced by the TAs, and yet they're being told, no, you have to, your replacement consents or new consents just 6 years. So what's the difference? Why are TAs more special?
I can only, again, I apologise, Your Honour, if I sound like a broken record, but it's coming back to that hierarchy of priorities.
Yeah.
And TAs are not per se in the business of producing drinking water. They're there to supply as a statutory requirement for their communities.
Side of it?
I think it's appropriate, again, if it's time-bound.
It's the same argument, isn't it?
Correct. It is the same argument. It's confined in terms of the scope of the takes required to community water supplies.
any other questions?
I've just got one question. In terms of the last matters you're discussing, the water management plan and the matters set out there, have you discussed those with the five TAs to see, you know, where they're at the moment and how they might go be in a position to actually satisfy these requirements?
Yes, I certainly made sure I discussed this with the TAs. I was partly mindful of a question to them on the stand as to whether they agreed and supported the provisions, but so hence I made sure that they were canvassed with the territorial authorities first. As I said before, Commissioner Bunting, is that there's an amalgam here of existing work and processes. So as I mentioned in response to Mr. Moore's question, there's some of the elements here, a TA asset manager will prepare anyway as part of the preparation of other documents, including the asset management plan for the infrastructure.
So they're on board with what you're proposing?
In short, yes.
Thank you. Thank you, Your Honour.
Just one more from me. So the lifetime of the assets, which are associated with the provision of drinking water, and we're told that can be from, and there's various years, 50, 70, or up to 100 years. This is not something that you've given particular weight to when you've come to advise us that it should be time-bound to, you know, to the next plan.
I don't think it is, and I think...
Why do you say that? That's really interesting.
Well, I was about to say, Your Honour, is that it's analogous to coastal planning, where again you've got a 35-year term under the RMA.
Yeah.
But to get a building consent,
yeah,
you'll need to go for 50, or more likely if it's public infrastructure, 100.
Mm.
So that again is the requirement on the TA. They'll have to ensure their life of their infrastructure extends way beyond, in an RMA sense, the legal ability to utilise it.
Mm.
But as I said, that's commonplace with other territorial assets, such as, you know, wharves, jetties and the like.
It's just that I've heard that, you know, if it's true that, you know, the asset that you're wanting to construct those assets have a lifetime of up to 100 years, therefore the argument is give us a 35-year permit, but you're not taking that approach. I think you're saying it's, you know, investment decisions and lifetimes of assets are different from the planning horizon for water.
Correct.
Yeah, and why do you say I know logically it is different, but what makes it different in your mind? Why, you know, how can you... can you assist me on this?
Certainly I can. Mm. So, look, turn it around the other way and say that the legal usage under Resource Management Act or successor must be aligned to the life of the infrastructure. In other words, you grant a 50 or 100-year permit. At that end, when you start going down that track, you're running into significant resource management issues. You're looking at being able to operate infrastructure potentially in conflict with other environmental management. It could be climate change. There could be a whole host of reasons why it's designed and life in an engineering sense for a long term, but it's not necessarily for a policy sense desirable in
to
a resource management sense
too.
To go that long term.
Because your environment, your surrounding environment might change.
Will change through no
necessary input by yourself.
Correct, yes.
And so then the shorter term, be it 35 years or something less than 35 years, allows what? What's the benefit of a shorter term than the term of the asset, the lifetime of the asset? It allows you to reconsider the surrounding environment.
In an integrated way.
In an integrated way.
Yes, that essentially is the crux of it. And I mean, yeah. It might have been in my primary or possibly my first set of supplementary evidence is that, I mean, for me, the scope and rate and scale of change, you know, with what we're having, you know, to address as professionals with the with these plan changes and then obviously the higher order direction through national policy statements and then a backdrop of quite substantial reforms, both within the resource management field and local government and elsewhere. A lot is happening in a very short, and that's just the time period that, that we're in. For me, it is a balancing act, but I think the term 2035, it also aligns with other. So, for example, that's the cycle of the long-term plan, which goes through the next 10-year cycle goes through to 2034.
Yeah.
So, from an asset manager's point of view, you know, sitting in a TA somewhere, they've got a clear metric to work within. They may not necessarily like it. They may want 35 years. They may want longer. But that's the environment, from my view.
And so for the territorial authorities that you've worked with, so not necessarily Otago but other elsewhere, when they're coming up for a review or a replacement consent, is it their expectation that it'll simply roll over in the same terms and conditions for 35 years, or do they have an expectation if the environment has changed, that there may be change consequential upon their taking?
I think for most of them it would be the expectation that, that it's 35 years from their perspective.
With no change? No other change? Rolling over?
That could well be the case.
It could be the case.
Yeah, because from the, you know, it all depends on the perspective is that they have a particular role and that is what they need to do. So it's long term certainty.
Yeah.
Starting point is and what you're saying.
That's correct. And look, it's been identified from the Section 32 material for PC7, you know, through to Mr. Pelsmaker's evidence. I mean, you can see for yourself in 6.4.19 where the policy and the existing, the existing Chapter 6 in the Water Plan, and it's unfortunate that it has a lengthy explanation because it's actually confused the issue and has led, as others have indicated, and I can see the reason why, to an expectation that that's what you, if you need it, you can get it.
Oh, yeah, that's under the matters of discretion for the duration. No, that's the policy
on duration. Explanation where you think, well, where does the policy save us?
Well, that's right. And I think that's from a drafting point of view, that's the other benefit of PC7 is that it's completely distinct from the remainder of the plan and that it doesn't have lengthy explanations, which I guess can be...
Well, that's true. No reasons and explanations.
So it's one of a number of things which I think ensures a transition through to the new plan, and that's solely on the grounds of, you know, clearer drafting, I think. I mean, that's just my impression of looking at PC7.
Yeah. I guess from one of the things that that we need to give careful consideration to is, you know, if TAs have an expectation born over experience, and perhaps it's also reasonable given, you know, the purpose for which they're supplying water, that their consents will be replaced on a continuous basis, or as and when requested, they'll be replaced, then there's no value, if the purpose of a 15-year consent was to give some certainty in the short term and then to allow the TAs to bring themselves in line with a changing environment or in line with policy going forward, well, it won't if the experience in this country is that they just get rolled over. whenever a replacement consent is sought. I mean, there's no value in 15. You could make it 35 in terms of, or make it 6, make it 10. That's just going to be rolled over.
Yes, that could well be the case elsewhere, but it's for one of the reasons why I've endeavoured to, as I said, that twin side of the ledger, a longer term for TAs, but the other side of the ledger is efficiency and effectiveness mechanisms for through water management plans and the like.
So that's TAs lifting their game in the region,
correct.
Really.
That's correct.
I saw real value in what you were drafting. All right. Anything arising as a consequence of the court's questions?
Not for me.
Not for you.
if I may reply to that.
No, you may, if you like. I was kind of tossing it over to the lawyers as well. That you've replied on their behalf, so that's good. All right.
I thought I'd get in before Mr. Moore, given if you got to listen to me at one point.
Oh, that's all good. And I actually do thank you for your contribution and parts of your evidence I was really interested in terms of your constraints-based planning. I thought that was a really, really interesting and very valuable discussion.
Mm. Oh, thank you.
Yeah. All right. So, is that you? Is that your final witness?
That's you,
bees. Okay. Anyway, you're free to go. I'll have to have a chat
thank
to
you,
lawyer. So I see that Mr. De Palsmaker also thought he's got an open mind and there's lots of value here too. So. Your process forward? We just get to reply and say, judge, you decide, or panel, you decide?
Good questions, Your Honour. The process forward in terms of preparing now for the council's reply is one of working with Mr. De Palsmaker, who sat through and listened basically to everything in terms of all of the evidence and working out issue by issue what the council position is, if the position has changed based on evidence. And you'll recall a number of months ago, in opening, there were some issues where Mr. De Palsmaker said he wanted to hear the evidence and see how it played out.
Placeholder.
Mm. Yes, and having now heard that evidence, he may or may not change his opinion on that, but he needs to work through the process.
I guess what I'm indicating, everything else really, if there's some opportunity to talk to each other, that would be good, rather than, especially if there is merit and we're in agreement, that would be great to actually have that indicated at the closings.
Yes.
So that then we really refine down exactly what it is that we need to decide.
Yes, so insofar as there might be a change in position that is then reflected in some further drafting put forward by Mr. De Palsmaker, I would have thought that there would be some dialogue between he and the planner, if there was a planner for the respective party. And picking up on trust power, for example, if a carve-out for the trust power assets was to be included into the wording of the plan change, I would have thought we would work together with trust power in relation to that wording to say, yes, we agree that there should be a carve-out and this is what it should look like, and we're agreed on that.
Yep.
So
that's exactly what I'm I think we're all looking for. We've got a big enough decision we've got a big enough decision anyway, which we need to crack on with, and it would be good to eliminate what you can.
Mm. Agreed.
All right. Thank you very much. So we're adjourned. Oh, we've got the chat for tomorrow, apparently.
Yeah, so I have heard conflicting.
He's going to be lifted and shifted.
He's moved to June.
He's moved to June. Yep. Does it? Right. Okay, so moved to June, which then means we can all go home.
Yep. Yes, which is... Now, in terms of... Sorry?
Follow-up processes.
Oh, that's the memorandum department down this end of the bench.
Somebody was going to report.
With Southern Lakes, I note that that evidence won't have been heard before Mr. De Pelsmaker's written his reply evidence, but he'll simply respond to that orally. If there's a reason why. And I might also flag the June week, there's a lot to get done in that week, noting that the court's not sitting on the Wednesday on account of the High Court's consideration of the Clutha decision.
Ah, yes, I thought it could be that case.
Yes, it is that one. So we will, in terms of shaping up what the scheduling looks like, we are trying to do that as in a really efficient way to make sure that we're done that week, but it is tight.
Well, yeah, because we've got a priority argument to come, and then what else? We had a scope argument to come.
Closings.
And then we've got closings.
Joint witnesses reporting back.
The return of the JWS.
Yes.
Yep, so that's good.
RPS, potentially.
Yes. And that could involve evidence?
Possibly. Evidence submission. On that subject, that is... That might be a subject which could be confined to evidence brief as it must be and legal submissions in writing as to its relevance. That may save a little time that week.
Like an agreed planning brief?
Well, it might be that, and then lawyers, I mean, the submission is one then of weight, predominantly.
Yeah, no. I mean, I guess that could be streamlined. But as always, the court's always is quite keen to hear from people in person in case it's got any questions. And actually, it just sounds different when you hear things in person than it does when you're actually hearing them in writing. You'd be amazed how different it actually sounds. In terms of the weight and emphasis and tone people bring to it, with the priority, I don't know that... I've forgotten how many folk might turn up to... talk about that, but it may well be that a single submission supported by all could be led, so there's or it may not.
That's a very strong possibility. Lawyers who have been present. Yes.
Sure. What did you just say?
And then we might just
all disagree with Gordon. Oh, yeah, I know.
We might be able to agree on that.
Well, you've agreed on a single sentence, I thought.
I guess what I'm signalling is there's going to be a need for us to find some efficiencies within that week to make it all happen, because Mr. De Pelsmaker also needs to come back, and he may be the subject of further cross-examination on his reply.
Which is large. So do you need more time?
Well, we're going to work through the scheduling and see what it looks like. Ms. Mallett advises that she is going to be canvassing council to see whether we can jointly work through the priorities issue. So,
That's both in relation to the submission, but then actually not down in my notes yet. You've got the solution. So regardless of where you go, 1, 2, 4, you still need a solution.
Yeah, if we can satisfy the court that there's jurisdiction through the RMA lens, then in a sense the response to the Dr. Somerville's opinion becomes...
Well, I know that's not what Stixon said. I wasn't too sure about that because if there was a difficulty under Section 124, then that's a pretty big difficulty unless... the region's not going to... it's not actually up to the regional council. If folks stop... If the rights of priority cease on the 1st of October, you're going into the irrigation season and you don't want folk going rogue.
I'd prefer to actually address that in open court, that issue, to provide hopefully a level of comfort to the rural community, because I can clearly signal the council and council for the council do take a different view on that than
But it is something that needs to be a decision on 124 actually needs to be made, but there's also a broader decision on the rule that needs to be made as well. The solution. And that might take a bit of time. Because it's a bit like your testing of your schedule, where you had to test it through scenarios. You really need to be ready for this and to have it tested.
Yes. So we will turn our minds to that. In terms of scheduling and court availability,
We will tell you tomorrow.
I mean, if we need an extra 2 days, say, it'd be helpful to know when 2 days might be available.
Oh, we can crack on with that. So we just need to know whether we can have the venue for the following week.
That would be the
and
starting.
Are we all available?
Yes, now I'm looking. When's that WCO we need to deal with?
Oh, I think that's...
beforehand.
16th of June.
Sorry.
That's the week before.
Before you come back, you're in Napier.
You will be in Napier.
Yes.
Maybe, unless you've handed it on to someone else. But I will definitely be in Napier.
No, that's before we come back. No, that's okay. I think that week... That week would be convenient, at least for council. So let's see what the availability is.
Yeah, so we're checking the availability of the venue. I know I'm fine, and we'll double check the roster for everybody else. Yep.
Very good.
Okay. Okay, you're right. There's probably a bit too much just for the 4 days. Yep. But so we'll look to find some more time. Yep. And look to take off the table what you can take off the table. I know you guys disagree. Dr. Somerville, and that's, as I said, I've been known to disagree with him and him with me before, so that's okay. But we will need to make a decision about that.
Mm-hmm. Yes, very good.
Now, do I need to release a minute about any of that? I only say that because I wouldn't mind taking some time off next week. So tomorrow's my best day for minute making.
Right, yes, Your Honour. I am in the process of drafting a memorandum and will be circulating that to council, other council, so that they can agree, conferring with them around that in terms of time frames. But having said that, a lot of it is consistent with what we've been discussing in court.
Yeah, so we're sort of looking to come back to the court. I mean, we've got some timetabling from Mr. De Palsmaker, we know, and his reply is going to come. And then we were thinking of the return of the planners for the JWS. I don't know that we need the technical bods, but just the planners for the JWS coming back. They're to file something within 2 weeks, and then solutions to priority within 2 weeks. And so if you're thinking that, I can draft a minute up on that basis. And perhaps note that we've got quite a bit to get through, broadly speaking, what we've got to get through, and we're looking to allocate some more time in the following week.
Yes, and that's consistent. Yep. Nuances around that I was going to be exploring was around the priorities and whether parties wanting to file their full legal submissions or whether it's just a synopsis of the matters that they are in disagreement with Dr. Somerville's memorandum, and that was looking to, I guess, create some efficiencies in that week of hearing time. If we were to file the full legal submissions in advance, then it may be that parties are only appearing for, or council appearing for questions rather than needing to address the submissions in full.
Or so it could be that they may agree to adopt a common position and that would be even more efficient.
Yes, that would. Yeah. So I think where we got to was perhaps the succinct summary of the areas of disagreement and then working amongst council as to how to address that and perhaps, one set of submissions.
Yep. And then you've got to, if you're presenting a synopsis on the areas of disagreement, it's got to be in sufficient detail so for the court to understand the argument and then make a call, if you like, whether to ask Dr. Somerville to respond. So, and he then needs time to respond, so that's why that sort of two-week period around the solution and the synopsis was actually, suggested.
Yes, and that was also to allow Mr. St. Clair to consider that solution if need be as well.
I've put him in the gun and I haven't spoken to him. Dr. Somerville and... Right. Yeah, so that's all 2 weeks before the return. So that we can then divvy it up and have people respond if we need to. Mm. Okay, that sounds like a lot of work. Mm.
Yes.
Okay, all right, thank you. Right, and I think on that basis we are adjourned.
Please.
All rise.